From the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Monday, August 26th. Same-sex marriage licenses may begin to be issued today in a third New Mexico county. Some 1,000 new gender-neutral marriage licenses have been ordered by Bernalillo's county clerk. A hearing in district court there this afternoon may order their issuance. If so, Bernalillo County will join Doña Ana and Santa Fe counties in legally recognizing marriage equality in recent days. Meanwhile, opponents of marriage equality in New Mexico are marshaling like-minded members of the public to attend a Tuesday meeting of Doña Ana's Board of County Commissioners. Christian political activists, the Traditional Values Action Committee, is encouraging their supporters to voice their disapproval of the county's issuance of marriage licenses to same-sex couples during the public comment period at Tuesday's 9 a.m. gathering at the County Government Center in Las Cruces. Santa Fe City Council meets tomorrow, Tuesday, instead of the usual Wednesday schedule. They'll hear public comment as they consider banning the use of plastic bags by city retailers. The ordinance would encourage merchants to offer reusable bags and place a fee on single-use paper bags. Also to be discussed is putting recommended changes to the city's charter before voters in a special election to take place concurrent with the March 2014 municipal election. The Charter Review Commission proposes that the mayoral post be given a vote on all matters that come before City Council. It would also deem the job a full-time position with commensurate pay and prohibit other employment. If put before voters next spring and approved, the changes would be implemented in 2018. Santa Fe County begins a number of public forums today on capital improvement projects, such as roads, parks, and public facilities. The meetings have been scheduled with both midday and evening sessions in all five districts, with a final presentation to the Board of County Commissioners on September 10th. The first meeting is underway presently at the Edgewood Senior Center. The county is also seeking citizen members for a capital improvements committee. Details can be found on the county website. The U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division joined the Mexican Consulate in Albuquerque this morning to begin sponsoring Labor Rights Week. A Fair Labor Standards Act presentation was made at the consulate, and it distributed compliance assistance materials to employers. A just-released UNM study indicates that a large percentage of Mexican nationals here in our state, both undocumented and those here legally, are routinely subjected to wage theft and other abuses. A similar presentation is set for noontime Friday on the UNM campus. Progressive advocacy group Progress Now New Mexico is decrying this weekend's announcement by Albuquerque Mayor R.J. Berry and two Republican city councilors to form a new equity in pay task force. It would seek to offer incentives to contractors who voluntarily choose to pay women on par with their male counterparts. Progress Now says it's political theater being staged in the run-up to Albuquerque's municipal elections. The group is calling on Duke City councilors to make equal pay mandatory, not voluntary, for every business. The New Mexico Mining Commission begins a hearing today in Santa Fe to consider a request to change state rules and regulations governing humate mines up to 60 acres. Humate is a coal-like substance often added to soils and fertilizers to increase crop yields. Mining company Mineris Vitae, LLC, has a humate mine that has exceeded its permitted 10 acres. Beyond that range, New Mexico's 20-year-old Mining Act requires environmental impact studies, a public hearing on pending permits, and an annual inspection once in operation. Environmental watchdog group Amigos Bravos is arguing against the requested rule changes. The Bernalillo County Metropolitan Detention Center is on target to decrease its jail population to the authorized capacity of 2,236. Some 2,300 inmates are currently housed there. 118 of those are scheduled to be relocated this week to other jails in Texas and New Mexico. The Albuquerque Journal reports that a federal judge stands at the ready to impose substantial daily fines come next month if Bernalillo County does not provide a plan for addressing safety and overcrowding concerns. In May, the county authorized some $7 million for temporary inmate transfers. A popular attraction at our nearby Bandelier National Monument has partially reopened to visitors today. The Alcove House is an ancestral kiva located in a niche high above Frijoles Canyon and reached by an extensive series of ladders. The ascent route and cave was found to be unstable and has been closed for repairs throughout the summer months. As of today, park visitors will once again be able to scale the ladders, though the kiva itself remains closed for further repairs. And weather for Santa Fe. Mostly sunny skies forecast today and through the work week, with highs in the low 80s. Most monsoonal moisture has been displaced westward into Arizona, and so just slight chances here each day for isolated thundershowers. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 78 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At Noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
At Noon on KSFR continues now with today's feature stories. For several years now, there have been concerns voiced that some of our state buildings may be inherently unsafe and are responsible for some diseases suffered by those working in them. The Communication Workers of America, Local 7076, which represents about 2,000 state workers, has taken up the task of bringing attention to this problem and finding remedies. Donald O'Leary is the president of that union, and he joins us now. Sir, tell us some of the recent history of this issue.
We've had issues started about maybe back in 2010, and more specifically in the public education building. It's the Jerry Apodaca building. We've had people in the past come to us telling us that they had concerns about their health issues and also issues that they believe that the basement they're working in was unhealthy, unsafe. So back in 2010, we talked to the state about it. The state stated that they had done some studies and that everything was okay. Well, CWA turned around and paid for our own study back in 2010. And I'm guessing right now, but this is before I was president, but I figure that the cost of that was about $10,000. And we did a study, and in the study it did show that there was concerns that we should have about mold and asbestos. From what I understand, back then, PD remodeled the bottom, the basement, and they covered over some vents. They didn't know what the vents were for, but they covered over them. And we found out, well, you know, those vents is what helps circulate air out of the building. So we had the concerns back then. So it's always been an issue with us, and we've been following up since then. And just from talking to people, we had found there was at least 22 to 33 people that had health issues. Some were cancer, some were respiratory issues, and such like that. So we were like, this is a big concern. And we have two employees that are currently working in PED. One has to wear a mask. Another one, he wears a mask, but was told he has to remove the mask if he doesn't have a doctor's excuse to wear it.
And tell us about the action your union took last Wednesday.
So what happened on Wednesday is we did a press release because we had another concerned person that's been working with us. He found out about a study that was done by the New Mexico Environment Department back in 2010. And apparently the study was done for the city of Santa Fe. And it focuses on about what they call vapor intrusion. And this was done because of all the issues that they had found out in the past, like at the new courthouse, about underwater gas lines or gas tanks, storage tanks. So this study came out, and through deep investigation, research, we found this study. And this study showed about there are certain areas in that area where the PED building was at that it marked quite a few places that were high potential for contamination. Now, in that map, it does not show that the buildings for the state are contaminated, but we don't know, and we doubt the study was done that much farther down.
You also addressed the Capitol Buildings Planning Commission to ask to be placed on the agenda for their next meeting. What happened with that?
We did make two requests at that meeting to be placed on the next agenda, and to this date, we haven't been invited, and the draft agenda already went out, and we're not on that agenda.
You've also delivered a letter to Speaker of the House, Kenneth Martinez. In that, what did you ask of him?
What we're asking him is, because he wasn't at that meeting that we went to 2 weeks ago. So what we're doing is we're just asking him, can you please add us to the agenda? As the co-chair, you have that authority to place us on the agenda. And only because it seemed like, you know, we weren't invited by the other co-chair, who is Mr. Burkle, who is the cabinet secretary for the General Services Department.
And these are public meetings with a public comment item on the agenda, correct?
Right. And that's how we were able to begin the conversation with this committee, is that we added our names to it. So if we're not on the agenda, we'll go about it the same way and be put for comments, for community comments section. But I am hopeful that we will be put on the agenda for the fact that we did talk to a Mr. Morgan, who works for GSD, who sounded very interested in our concerns, and from what I understand, is already following up on our concerns. So I'm hoping that there's not intent just to blow us off, but actually hear us out and want to work with us to see if there's problems.
Have you had open support from anywhere inside state government?
I would say yes. I'd say the New Mexico Environment Department, even though they did this study, which is a good study, they seem really motivated to help. I think they really understand. If anybody, they're probably the ones that understand the most of what this issue is and how serious it is or can be.
And if someone has concerns about the safety of their state building, what should they do?
Just to keep an ear out, and if they do have concerns, to let us know. And hopefully together we can get an investigation done that can actually look into this. And it's also to stress to people, we're not saying these buildings are sick, but we're asking the government, the state government, to verify that they're not sick, especially now this time that they're wanting to renovate, rebuild all these buildings. If they're going to work on these buildings, let's work on them right. This way they don't have to build them and then tear them down because we found out later that there was a problem. They can call us at the Union Hall right now, and the number would be 505-955-8534. And then keep a lookout for the website.
Donald O'Leary from CWA Local 7076. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
The City Council meeting, normally scheduled for the last Wednesday of the month, will be held on the last Tuesday this month, August 27th. KSFR will air the meeting beginning at 5 p.m., preempting our usual programming on Tuesday evenings. Alternative radio can be heard on Sunday at 5 p.m., and Nuestra America will air on this Wednesday, August 28th at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday night at the Opera will resume September 3rd. The agenda for this City Council meeting is available on their website, santafenm.gov.
18 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. This week, the U.S. Department of Labor Wage and Hour Division partners with the Mexican Consulate in Albuquerque in sponsoring Labor Rights Week. A just-released study by the University of New Mexico shows that in our state, a number of Mexican immigrant laborers are routinely subjected to wage theft. Jessica Garrett is a doctoral student and a co-author of that study. She joins us now. Jessica, tell us about your findings.
All right. Well, this is a study that I conducted with a professor at the University of New Mexico, Professor Andrew Schrank. And basically, it was an attempt to scientifically quantify what workers and what activists knew sort of anecdotally was happening. So organizations like Somos Un Pueblo Unido of Santa Fe, which helped us with this study, had been hearing for years that this is something that workers experience, right? That they work a certain amount of hours and they're not paid for all of them, or that, you know, they don't receive a paycheck at all, or they're asked to work off the clock, all of these various forms of wage theft. And while that sort of anecdotal evidence is really, really helpful, what we also wanted was, you know, a sense of its prevalence. How many workers are affected by this? How often does this occur? You know, what forms does it take? All of these sorts of questions. And the survey was an attempt to do that. So we had a sample of around 210. Now, not all of those, you know, were working currently or whatever, but out of the ones who had worked in the state of New Mexico, and I don't remember the specific numbers, it was 27% of respondents had experienced at least one instance of wage theft. So this is pretty high. It seems like it's a big problem.
Do you think this occurs because it's somehow easy to get away with?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely reason to think that. And especially with immigrant workers, there's a lot of research that suggests that employers target them for a reason, that employers target them because they feel more confident they can get away with it, maybe because they think that immigrants are less aware of their rights in the workplace, or that immigrants are less likely to go to authorities to report when these crimes are committed. So in our study, we found that only 12% of those who had experienced wage theft actually reported it. And of those, only 4 of them went to a government agency. So some people were just calling their HR department or maybe, you know, trying to call their employer out on it. So, yeah, this is a shockingly small amount of reporting going on, which makes it seem like employers feel pretty confident that if they commit this crime, that there's not really any penalty for doing so.
Looking beyond the numbers to the human face of the issue, I suppose it's important to realize that many of these workers are relying on this money to support their family.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, some of these workers, it's really blatant. They work an entire job, say it's a construction worker, and they're on this project, and they're just not paid for the entire job. So it could be weeks or months of work that they don't actually receive a paycheck for. And then other workers, it's just hours swiped from paychecks, or they're not being paid the minimum wage. And when you're living to paycheck to paycheck, that makes a huge difference in your ability to provide for your family. So, yeah, it's a huge problem for the individuals that experience it, and then it's also a problem for communities at large. You know, these are earnings that aren't going back into the economy. This undercuts employers who are paying the minimum wage, who are paying their workers what they owe them. So, yeah, it's a really big problem.
Where can a worker who thinks they're being shortchanged go for some assistance?
Well, in the state of New Mexico in particular, there actually are strong laws on the books to help workers, right? They can go to the State Department of Workforce Solutions. And because of a law that activists like the organization Somos Un Pueblo Unido managed to pass in 2009, workers are protected against retaliation, so they can actually know that if they do this, it is against the law for the employer to retaliate against them in any way. And then, you know, they can receive their back wages by filing suit with the Department of Workforce Solutions. And, you know, I should say, like, probably the best thing to do is to get in touch with your other coworkers and who might be experiencing the same thing, and also reach out to an organization like Somos Un Pueblo Unido, which has experience with helping workers and immigrant workers in particular mobilize these laws.
Anything else the general public can do to help remedy the situation?
Yeah, I think, first of all, being aware that it's going on, you know, is one thing. Employers should definitely educate themselves about the law and what it means to workers when they don't actually follow the law. Yeah, and then I think outreach, you know, and when everyday citizens hear that these things are happening, they can, A, contact their representatives, contact the Department of Workforce Solutions and say, like, we know this is going on. It hurts our communities. It hurts individuals. And something needs to be done about this. One part of this that's going on is that while these laws are on the books, that doesn't mean that enforcement works perfectly. So the agencies that are meant to enforce these laws also need to be held accountable and make sure that they enforce them, you know, as they're written.
And anything else you'd like to add?
No, I mean, I would just like to add that this is also, you know, this is a big problem for immigrant workers. Like I said, it hurts our communities. And, you know, there is also evidence that this it's not just immigrant workers who experience this. And while our study focused on immigrant workers in particular, it seems like a lot of low-wage workers experience this as well. And you have rights in the workplace no matter what your legal status is. And if something like this is going on, then you should absolutely reach out to organizations like Somos Un Pueblo Unido, talk to your coworkers about it, and find ways to get redress and to get remedies.
Jessica Garrett, many thanks for joining us here at KSFR today. And we'll be back with more of At Noon for you in just a moment.
Do you know of anyone who's hiring? With the skimpy paycheck I've been getting, I've been having a hard time paying my rent.
But you're working all the time.
But they don't pay us overtime, and we're not even getting the minimum wage.
That's illegal. You should report that.
What if I get fired?
If you make a wage claim, you're protected from retaliation. This happened to me about a year ago, and the judge made my boss pay me 3 times what he owed me. Why don't you call Somos Un Pueblo Unido? They can tell you what your rights are, then you decide. You work hard for your money. Don't let your employer steal your wages. For more information, call Somos Un Pueblo Unido at 505-424-7832.
12:25 as At Noon continues. And as we've heard in recent days, more and perhaps more counties in New Mexico are allowing same-sex couples to wed. But that asks the question, what is happening with LGBT issues around the world? Here's KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard with his report.
Now that same-sex marriage is becoming a reality, more places in the United States in general, and New Mexico in particular, we thought it might be interesting to look into LGBT issues throughout the world. Preston Wood is the director of the Answer Coalition New Mexico. He points out that prejudice still exists in some countries.
The transformation of the LGBT struggle is certainly amazing in the United States, but it's also very true that in the United States and other countries around the world, such as Russia, where there's a big anti-LGBT campaign going on, and also in other countries such as Jamaica and Honduras, there's also anti-gay campaigns going on. So it is a worldwide struggle, but it's contained within the struggles, the political struggles inside many different countries. I think that there's been a huge amount of concern in this country about a terrible campaign against LGBT people going on in Russia. The Putin government has made an alliance with some of the most reactionary elements and has promoted violence against gay people throughout the country in a way that just has to be condemned. On the other hand, I think we're seeing an amazingly resilient and courageous LGBT movement in Russia that's saying, no, we're not going to stand for this. And this movement is growing and getting a lot of recognition and support from people everywhere, both LGBT people, but people who also have a strong feelings about civil rights and equality for everyone.
A few countries are more welcoming.
Well, you may know that Canada has same-sex marriage. Mexico City recognizes same-sex marriages as well. And there, in some of the Scandinavian countries, you also see reflections of a movement that's grown and matured and has not been inhibited by well-organized right-wing bigots, as has been going on in this country and other countries around the world. It's uneven, of course, but you can see a lot of hope. Cuba, for example, has launched a whole campaign against homophobia, Socialist Cuba, that's quite amazing if you consider the transformation from a very anti-gay policies towards much more inclusive and education through its media and so forth for everyone. So you can see a lot going on around the world. And my opinion is, and Answer's opinion is, that when these things happen, we're seeing very strong resistance and people who are fighting for democracy and fighting for equality. And it's being watched around the world. The Russian thing is a scandal because people are, I think all of us are shocked by the extent of the bashings and the videos of gay people being beaten. It's a long struggle that's certainly not over yet. We have a long way to go, both in this country and elsewhere.
Wood is optimistic about the next few years.
Well, I think we're seeing a real amazing shift, sea change going on in the United States, where millions and millions of people are being affected by the broad and resilient and strong organized LGBT movement and their allies. And it's leading to a situation where there's, in the area of same-sex marriage, there's wide acceptance of it now. And you can see this happening in New Mexico, where all over the place it's just popping up. No one can stop it. The clerk in down south around Las Cruces, you know, saying, I'm fed up of waiting. I'm going to start giving licenses. And same thing's happening in Santa Fe. It's very heartening to see this going on. And I think that this is a struggle for basic civil rights and democracy that's going to have an effect on all the struggles against racism, women's rights, and all these things, because there's a growing unity around it, around the issue, which was not there 10, 15 years ago. So where is it going to go? We don't know, but we still know that among more oppressed sectors, there's still a lot of violence. There was a shooting in New York City just a couple of days ago in Harlem, a transgender person. Some of the most oppressed people are still being attacked, and there's a lot of anti-gay violence. There's a lot of suicide among young LGBT people. So we have to keep our eye on the prize and keep moving ahead and not think that that it's all over. But I do think this is a very heartening thing for the overall struggle for justice in this country, because it's going to strengthen all other movements who are watching and seeing that through organization we can win, such as immigrant rights and those of us who are concerned about the gutting of the Voting Rights Act. We have to, like, unite around these issues, and this is a positive sign. It shows you how struggle and organization can change people, and people, once they're confronted with issues, very often more than not, will come out on the right side and understand this is a civil rights issue, not a religious issue.
Preston Wood with the Answer Coalition.
I said we just need to stay active, stay out in the streets, stay organized, reach out, go out, and continue to move forward in together to achieve real peace and equality for everyone.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
And Dan Garrity back with you now at the KSFR News Desk. And this next item flows easily from the previous one. Last Wednesday, Doñana County began issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples. On Friday, by a judge's order, Santa Fe followed suit. And there's possibility later this afternoon that Bernalillo County may do likewise. But for all these couples, getting the license is just the first step. Now there's need to have a ceremony. Joining us now to talk about this is Gail Lindsay Mariner, minister at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Santa Fe. Reverend, you are officiating at a special ceremony coming up on Sunday. Tell us about that.
Well, we are hosting at 12:15 after our worship service. We are hosting a wedding for anyone, gay or straight, who wants a church wedding. We are extending the invitation to the GLBT community, but also to their friends and allies, because last February, I made a statement that I wouldn't act as an agent of the state and sign marriage licenses until I could sign them for anyone in my congregation or anyone in the community. And so we are having a party because we are so elated with the decision here in Santa Fe County to offer marriage licenses to gay couples and lesbian couples, as well as to straight couples.
There are other pastors scattered throughout our city's religious congregations who support marriage equality in principle, but whose hands are tied by church leadership.
That was one of the most exciting parts of it. As I went to the congregation on Saturday, there was a meeting at the church after all this happened about something completely unrelated. And I said, I want to float an idea with you. I can always write a letter to the papers under my own name, but what I'd like us to do is something much bigger. And when I explained it to them, everyone in the room applauded and started signing up. Oh, I'll help welcome people, and I'll take charge of the reception afterwards. And it was wonderful, the widespread support in the congregation for making this happen.
And Reverend, for those who want to participate, how can they arrange for that?
All they need to do is call the church office and let us know that they want to be there. The number is 505-982-9674.
Reverend Gail Lindsay Mariner with the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Santa Fe, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
Santa Fe has just experienced the two driest years on record, and the drought is not going away. In times like these, we have to save every drop. One way is to water during the cool part of the day. If you water when it's hot, the water evaporates, plants can burn, and you could be fined. Under city rules, you cannot water between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. from May 1st to October 31st. So, water when it's cool outside. It's better for your garden. It's better for our water future. And it's the law. A message from the City of Santa Fe.
Santa Fe psychologist Dr. Penelope Penlin is pleased to help present KSFR programming. Dr. Penlin's diverse practice fosters the emergence of each person's authentic self in all domains of life. Like KSFR, she strives for thoughtful and independent inquiry to foster individual freedom and responsibility in the context of community. Dr. Penelope Penlin, 983-3990.
12:35 here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, is the perfect opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
On Google, I looked up the name Santa Fe. At the bottom of the first page was Welcome to Santa Fe Vineyards, Estrella del Norte, the 1951's Randolph Scott starring Western Santa Fe, and Santa Fe News, the next Google listing up, the city's Santa Fe NM official website, followed by BNSF Railway, Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway, then Mr. Otten's SantaFe.com, next listing driving up Santa Fe, Hyundai's SUV. The Wikipedia article on Santa Fe is next. After that, and out searching the city's website, even though it's part of it, the Santa Fe Convention and Visitors Bureau, Then comes news for Santa Fe, the SUV, and the number one non-ad Google search listing for Santa Fe, the Santa Fe Station Hotel and Casino, located, of course, in Las Vegas, New Mexico. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Santa Fe Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.